SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. A busy 3 hours ahead and mostly handicapping and some excitement about, I think the excitement is maybe building a little, the interest and the buzz for Sunday, for the game. And so we'll get some opinions. We'll survey. I'm just looking down the list. I think everybody. Everybody has either a limited opinion or some serious opinion. Rich Eng, we're going to get to Rich. And Rich certainly on the game. And Scully as well. I'm sure Ed DeRosa. We're going to do another of the contests like we did 2 weeks ago. In fact, I put it together. Earlier this morning, after the show, I'll post it on Twitter and Facebook and everywhere else. And there's going to be eight questions, eight props, and then two tiebreakers. I think I came up with some fun. the props are, some of the props are just, silly when you go through them. But it makes for a fun contest. Some over-under on yardage and player comparisons, etc., and came up with a couple of good fun things. So we'll get everybody's opinions, and we'll also, of course, go from track to track, and I think we'll hit some combination of five of the ovals, including festival preview at Tampa. And for whatever reason, it didn't really connect to me until this morning, until I was looking at putting that little contest together. It didn't register to me the combination of Saturday at Oldsmar at Tampa Bay Downs and the game Sunday. It's a big weekend for Tampa. Not as big as it would have been under normal conditions. You would have, Tampa is allowing limited spectators themselves, and of course they're talking what 25,000. For the game, but it's kind of too bad because, another 50,000 people in that, or I guess they said 65,000 is the capacity. So, another 40,000, I'm sure some people, as it is, I'm sure there's some visitors that are going to be at Tampa tomorrow. So at the track, and it's a good card. It's a good card. Scully's going to, go through the stake sequence, and when we talk to Nick Tamaro in hour three, we'll do the cross country, the seventh and eighth from Aqueduct, and the 9th, 10th, 11th from Tampa is the cross country, and it'll all be on Fox on America's Day at the Races. So a lot of that. So quick rundown. Pat McKenna is actually going to join us here in just a couple of minutes. And this has been such a crazy week. There's been so much content, frankly, and I kept pushing off. Ed DeRosa was supposed to be Wednesday, and so we'll get to Ed in hour two today in his traditional slot around 10:40, give or take. I couldn't get to Chris Griffin yesterday, so Chris is going to visit. We'll look at we'll look back at Sunday from Sam Houston and look at tonight and Saturday. So a couple of visitors, and I mentioned Rich Eng, who we couldn't get to yesterday either. So there's about four holdovers, including Pat McKenna. And Pat, I you heard me probably yesterday kind of hinting at something really positive, at least from my standpoint, and I think a lot of players that Pat is going to share. I don't want to take the thunder away from him. And so we'll catch up with Pat McKenna in just a couple of minutes. Hammer from Oaklawn. Don't know if he's got a guest today or not. Scully, so there's your first hour. Jay Privman with some Derby Watch. We'll recap the two Derby prep from last week with the Lewis and the Holy Bull. Get Jay's impressions. And I always remind everybody to read Jay's expanded track notes, the basic chart notes that Jay goes through every runner. And it's always valuable because even the horses that aren't going to go forward toward, you know, 9 furlong Derby preps, etc., Jay will tell you whether they're going to be better off sprinting, better off on the turf, or seeking softer company. So we'll get Jay's weekend recap from the two preps last week, and we'll talk about the two preps tomorrow with the Withers and the Sam Davis. And also we'll have Jay look at the other stakes at Santa Anita tomorrow, which are good. Good card. So four stakes, Thunder Road as well, and San Marcos and the Las Virgenes and the San Vicente. So we'll get those in from Jay. And then there's a significant maiden race that it does include the highly anticipated debut of Bissos on Sunday. Ed DeRosa, I mentioned, Chris Griffin, Nick. We'll talk to Mike Welch. We'll get some postscript from last weekend and look at the couple of stakes. And it looks like there's that important maiden race, some very nice sibling strength in that. It's not the seventh. The seventh is the 6 furlong race. It goes a little bit later in the, I think. Let me see. The 6 furlong race is the seventh. I made a very bad pun last night about a runner in there. It's the 10th race. 444, in fact. Bad luck number. The mile 3-year-old maiden special. So we'll get some Mike Welsh in here and Nick and Rich Eng in hour three. So 9 visitors, and we'll get going actually momentarily. Let me mention a couple of news elements. Certainly we're tracking carefully the HHR and how the, you know, its progress is going to go in the legislature at Frankfurt. So made it out of committee unanimously. That was certainly no surprise. The next layers of discussion are going to come forth. All right. So we'll pause that for today and look ahead to next week with the HHR. All right. And hope for the best. Should mention too that as I just give me a second here, they'll be looking at the horses at the Kentucky Winter Mixed Sale. Mention this now, and we'll revisit it on Monday. The Monday and Tuesday sessions, 10 a.m. for both, and. Really a nice catalog. There's no shortage of interesting runners that'll go on with it. And, you know, then there's the short yearlings that are in here. And one horse, I don't know if this is going to happen after the race on Saturday, but Ladies Island, I should check with Paul Matisse and company and Rich Averill. Ladies Island is listed in the catalog. And so I don't know if the start on Saturday tomorrow is the last of her career, the 7-year-old mare, with the barn or not. And maybe they'll decide after the race if they're going to go ahead and ship her up to Kentucky to sell. So just happened to be one name in looking at it. She's hip 524. So she would technically would sell on Tuesday. So we'll maybe touch base with Boyd Browning on Monday and look ahead to the end of the mixed sale season, and starting to keep an eye on the catalogs are starting to drop for the 2-year-old and training sale activity. Right now, going to get Pat McKenna in here. Pat was supposed to be with us at the end of yesterday, and so I had to make him first today. And we are always happy to check in with the New York Racing Association's Director of Communications. Pat McKenna, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm sorry about yesterday. Kind of got away from us.
It happens.
Well, it's been kind of content overload, and I've got there's like four sessions today that could have been or were supposed to be earlier in the week. So they're stacked up like planes over O'Hare, as we say. when you come up the Jersey Turnpike, you can identify with this. The best is at night when you're driving up from, let's say, Philly, and we'd be heading home to Saratoga, and you're starting to get within range of Newark Airport, and you can see the lights of the planes, 3 minutes apart in the sky. It's the coolest thing.
Yeah, I used to be a New Jersey commuter, lived in Hoboken, commuted to Trenton nearly every day, so I am very familiar with that drive.
And it's also fun to like race planes that are taking off or landing next to the turnpike.
You're a real daredevil.
Well, speaking of daredevils, the association, Pat, I've been excited for days to have you break this news, and it's a topic that we're actually visiting on the show now weekly. It's part of a topic in terms of the long term interest of the industry looking forward, and the computer assisted wagering topic is something that NYRA addressed when limiting the late pick five to strictly retail customers, not allowing the computer groups in. And with the Empire Six decision to, at the beginning of the year, to basically force it out, no jackpot style, the decision to keep the jackpot, out of the equation in February, it also comes with a decision on that front with the computer-assisted wagerers. Tell everybody about it.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Steve. And not only the late pick five, but also the cross country, which is
right.
Important to note as well. I know that at NYRA we feel a real responsibility and a commitment to the everyday horse player who supports us throughout the year, not only on big days, but each and every day. And with that in mind, we took a really hard look at the Empire Six, and even when I'll back it up just a little bit, we don't take these things lightly. The Empire Six was years of regulatory work, of analyzing jackpot wagers in general. We really felt that there was a desire among customers and players for a jackpot style wager rather than deprive them of that option. And it's always just an option. We started to offer it a couple of years ago. We've seen that this wager again is supported and the jackpot pool grows because of the everyday horse player day in, day out, betting it at Aqueduct, at Belmont Fall, whatever the case may be. And what we've seen is that although this wager grows largely on the backs of everyday horse players without the advantages of algorithms and the deep pockets that the CAW players bring to bear, they then have a distinct advantage, meaning the CAW folks have a distinct advantage when it comes to those mandatory payout days. So there seemed to be a discrepancy in terms of fairness with everyday horse players supporting the wager and CAW folks then coming in on the mandatory days and having a real advantage, again, because of the volume with which they're essentially algorithmic trading these races. So, NYRA is a little bit different than other jurisdictions and other racetracks. It's not just about our bottom line. Will we see a decrease in handle? It's likely. But you know, we're comfortable with that because, you know, our charge at NYRA is to grow the sport, to sustain thoroughbred racing in New York State. You know, we're committed to that more so than anything else. It's why we're set up as a not-for-profit. It's why we think it makes all the sense in the world to put every last dollar back into the sport, back into the facilities, back into our historic racetracks. And this is a part of that commitment. So, you know, it's also, this is not to villainize anyone. You know, there is nothing against the rules about the way that the CAW folks have approached this, you know, have approached the sport. And it's much more attuned with high volume trading, whether that commodity be, you know, pork bellies or a race card at Aqueduct, Belmont, or Saratoga. So it's a different viewpoint. And again, not trying to demonize or villainize anyone, but we are trying to level the playing field with these particular multi-race wagers so that it's not tilted towards those folks with distinct advantages, meaning complicated algorithmic trading and extremely high volume.
Well, this has become a really, it's a hot button issue, and there's lots of layers and challenges about the discussion, you know, for the industry, because, you know, while it's certainly nice to have the, you know, the volume that and the liquidity that you know, that their, you know, that their handle brings to the pools, there's also that tipping point that has made their involvement you know, that much more difficult for the retail player. And from a couple of different standpoints that we keep driving this point home, they're creating an artificial extra layer of takeout, essentially, against the retail player, and they're deflating prices because the ability of the computer programs and the algorithms to, you know, look and look at probables and then, you know, send money in to level out those probables, you know, that they then, you know, have a wagering format against, it basically siphons value out of the pool. You know, the exact is, I mean, it's several years now where people have gone, you know, have looked pre-race at probables, you know, maybe a couple of minutes ahead of time, and then by the time the race goes off, the numbers have dropped because that money pours in the last 3 minutes, and especially in the last minute, give or take, minute and 15. And what you thought was going to be an exacta that you hit to pay 120, you know, suddenly pays 70, and it's incredibly frustrating to the players, and you know, we've had this discussion now for years, and the industry, you know, the industry was warned about the potential for this to grow out of control, and so the clawback that, you know, that several ovals have and racing teams of organizations have you know, instituted, and that, you know, NYRA is doing here aggressively. I mean, to exclude them from the Empire Six and you know, the late pick five, and that was the late pick five, Pat. I mean, that went on. They were being kept out of the late pick five for quite a while before it got publicly disclosed, even. So, you know, you've been doing this, you know, you've been doing this actively for, you know, for a while. And, you know, this addition on the pick six, it seems like a you know, a real positive for players.
Yeah, and your point is spot on about, you know, you talked about it this week at length, the idea of the effective takeout. You know, if I'm playing a multi, if even to your point about the exacta, that ordinarily in the absence of the CAW play might pay 90, you know, instead pay 70, it may seem like relatively small sums, but you add it up over a period of time, and all of a sudden, $500, $600, $700, I'm in action for another 2 or 3 weeks, right? I mean, those are significant sums, and we know, and I think that what you're channeling is that it can be demoralizing for the player that's handicapping, that's spending time with these races, spending hours on these cards. And again, it's just about equalizing the playing field a little bit, considering that there are inherent advantages that that these CAW groups bring to bear, namely extremely high volume.
Well, obviously, to pull a line from the Hudsucker proxy, I'm for it. it's a nice piece of news and a positive, and I know the players, you know, will appreciate.
Yeah, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that. You know, we're still looking at all this, and credit to Dave O'Rourke for allowing us to take some chances. And even when you look at the pilot program that started in January with the mandatory each day, just really diving into this and not being afraid to change midstream if the results aren't what we expect, to really approach these complicated questions with an open mind and let the numbers, let the data drive the decision-making process. Luckily, in this case, I think that this supports the data supports what we're doing, and philosophically, equally important that, you know, we're committed to our customers. We're committed to the players that support us and love the sport and watch the sport and live and breathe with what we're doing every day. You know, more than just customers. These are players that truly care about the future of the sport.
Well, and on a similar note, to include kind of the rip from today's headline stories, the past week, you know, not only to commitment to, you know, players and stakeholders in the game, also to the community at large, both in South Ozone Park and in and around Elmont. I saw that terrific piece that Bob Ehalt did about the vaccination program at the tracks. And it's a natural, obviously, especially for Aqueduct, where, you know, the accessibility is a snap in terms of the subway. Talk about that, Pat. And I don't think it's gotten the publicity that it deserves.
I mean, I think this frankly all started with way back in those scary early days of the spring in April and May, when New York State identified Aqueduct as an ideal location for an overflow hospital. Luckily, thankfully, we didn't need those overflow hospitals. They used Javits as one of those sparingly, and the hospital capacity held, and it didn't become required. But what that process with New York State in coordination with FEMA did, I think, is to remind the state that this is a central location that is well known to everyone, especially in Queens. It's incredibly accessible, as you just mentioned, by virtue of the A train. We have parking for especially, you know, which is especially important in Queens, a borough where more folks are driving from place to place. Car ownership is a little bit higher. And, you know, when you're thinking of these vaccination centers, these vaccinations that are obviously in such demand right now, people are coming from throughout the five boroughs, throughout New York, whenever they can find appointments. So New York State rapidly mobilized their folks to turn the first floor at Aqueduct into a vaccination center that is run by New York State over at Belmont Park in the Belmont Cafe. That is also a vaccination center that's run by Northwell Health, Northwell Health being a private hospital, the largest private hospital group in New York, and they have significant responsibilities throughout Long Island with the vaccination distribution. So it is incredible to see the first floor turned over to the state so they can vaccinate people and get us out of this you know, this continuing nightmare. You know, and I think Bob hit it on the head. Whatever we can do at Naira, this is, you know, to our way of thinking, this is a small thing that's really important. And if New York State is able to increase the supply of vaccinations that we're getting from the federal government, it sounds like that's happening every week, if not every other week, then we would be more than happy to expand the space that they can use to get as many New Yorkers vaccinated as quickly as possible and get us out of this pandemic. Because as we know, the vaccination is the answer, along with continuing to wear masks, be responsible, not gather in groups, and do everything that the health folks are asking and pleading and frankly begging us to do. So I've seen it in action. It's, you know, it's humbling to see. I mean, this really is the, you know, the end. It feels like the light at the end of the tunnel, without a doubt. So almost full circle that, you know, we had prepared for the field hospital at Aqueduct. And now on the other side of it, we're vaccinating New Yorkers right there at a historic racetrack with live racing going on. It's quite the set of circumstances.
On that topic, too, Pat, the announcement of the stake schedule and the you know, good portion of the year, and you know, people are already, you know, kind of holding their breath about where things stand for Saratoga. I mean, obviously, stakeholders, owners, and limited attendance continues at Aqueduct for now. Some speculation and the ongoing monitoring of the return to Belmont, and then by summer, obviously, you know, everybody's holding their breath that they can come to Saratoga this year, at least, you know, some percentage. Where do things stand on that front?
Sure. We've actually yet to release the state schedules. What we released last week was the racing calendar through the end of 2021. We'll roll out those state schedules as they become available, starting with Belmont spring summer, followed by Saratoga, Belmont, and Aqueduct fall into December of 2021, believe it or not. That obviously generated discussion and questions, especially as it relates to the Belmont Stakes and Saratoga, rightly so. We recognize and appreciate that everyone wants to get back to the track. Everyone wants to get back to the sports they love and sit in a seat and have a beer and eat a hot dog, wager on some races. It all sounds pretty fantastic. What we're doing is following, we watched extremely closely the pilot program that Governor Cuomo announced with the Buffalo Bills. They had two playoff games out in Buffalo, 7,500 fans in a, 80 or 90,000 seat stadium. All 7,500 of those fans were tested prior to the Saturday game. That began on Wednesday. Those were rapid delivery PCR tests. So they weren't rapid tests, as in you didn't show up at the game on Saturday, get tested, and walk through. You came to a designated location Wednesday, Thursday, took a PCR test, a gold standard in COVID testing, the most accurate test available. Those tests were then shipped to the BioReference Laboratory in New Jersey and returned, and anyone that could then show their negative test and had a ticket was allowed into the game. So I think that the likelihood of some form of either testing or proof of complete vaccination, you know, that something like that, I think, is probably what we're looking at for the spring and the summer. And we don't know what that looks like. We're obviously awaiting guidance, and the governor just last week mentioned that the state and his team are developing guidance for events. They announced that weddings could come back up to 150 people with the caveat that everyone is tested, and those weddings and events are approved by local health departments. So the local health departments, the state health department, the state at large still will have lots to say in the coming weeks. We'll also be watching what happens with the Yankees and Mets in April as Major League Baseball opens their season. What are we learning from these experiences? What did we learn from the Buffalo Bills? There were no positive tests that they identified emanating out of those two games with 7,500 folks in pods, you know, distance from one another, sticking with the group of people that you came with. So this will be a new framework this summer. I think that much is clear. So we're, you know, we're working. It sounds a lot like what we were saying last year in advance of of Saratoga, but it remains the case that, you know, this is a fluid and ever-changing dynamic. And what we can do is work closely with the state, with the Gaming Commission, you know, develop plans that assume a number of different scenarios, reduced capacity, some version of testing, and we'll see. I mean, we have the benefit of time, and I know that there is a natural impatience because there is this pent-up energy that the pandemic has certainly created. We're in the midst of winter. I'm staring out the window at, you know, 18 inches of snow on the ground, and we're thinking of things like Saratoga to get us through these times. But, yeah, the time is on our side. And I think if there's one thing we've learned through this pandemic, that there is no reason to hem yourself in or box yourself in by trying to make decisions in advance of the health department and in advance of actual guidance from those who really know what they're talking about.
Pat McKenna with us, PC McKenna on Twitter, and of course the communications director for the New York Racing Association, and happy to you know, particularly to start the conversation with Pat with the news that NYRA is going to exclude the computer assisted wagering groups from the Empire Six, and you know, with yesterday's slate, the Empire Six will continue again after the January announcement of you know, the jackpot portion eliminated, basically a daily pick six, and it's welcome news. And of course, the cross country as well as the late pick five already had excluded the groups. And Pat, and I, as we mentioned, the vaccination center executions, we should also remind or you know, just applaud the work that has gone in to the backstretch community at Belmont when it comes to, you know, the barns.
Yeah, absolutely, Steve.
Right?
You know, we're currently at zero cases among residents at Belmont Park, which is amazing. And it also shows you that we are a community, and we largely mirror what's happening outside the gates as numbers continue to fall in Nassau County, throughout the five boroughs, across New York State. Those numbers are also falling among our backstretch community. But back to the Bobby Hall piece, you know, Joe Applebaum, Martin, Will Empievich at NYSA, truly a team effort. I mean, and this is ongoing. This is certainly not a victory lap by any means, because now the next challenge is working through the vaccination centers, ensuring that we're prepared, that we're advocating for the backstretch community who is living in a congregate setting in dormitories and should also have access to that vaccine. But it's just, we recognize that this really is, you know, there seems to still be lots of questions. And I think it comes down to the fact that there's just not enough vaccine right now to really open up the economy in a way that that people would want, and to open up some of these events. But we're moving in the right direction. I think you hear that echoed throughout the governor's office, public health experts, people like Anthony Fauci, who we still listen to, you know, day in, day out. You know, hopefully late spring, early summer, things are starting to open up, vaccinations are widespread, and we can get back to doing the things that we love together.
Like playing the races, and ideally, ideally, you know, getting out to in force to Aqueduct, Belmont, and Saratoga. Pat, I really appreciate it, and I can tell already. I just put out a little notice with that, you know, really encouraging news regarding the pick six, the umpire six, and look forward to catching up, try to get down to Aqueduct. I wish I could have been there last Saturday, but we will see you soon, and we'll talk soon. And congratulations to everybody involved at the association for, you know, a lot of the, for a lot of good news across the board.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Always appreciate the opportunity to come and talk.
Pat McKenna, everybody, who really has been just a terrific addition to the scene in New York. Let's stay right here, and we will only have a couple of really brief breaks at the top of each hour. James Scully is standing by, and we're going to utilize Scully, I think, to a great degree on the Tampa sequence. Tomorrow it is Festival Preview Day, and they'll come back on March 6th with Tampa Bay Derby Day and everything that goes along with it. But before we do that, we got to talk to James about his Kentucky Derby report from last week with the Lewis and the Holy Bull. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, it's a big weekend with the Super Bowl, and we got a couple of Kentucky Derby preps last weekend. Had two marquee races, really, the Holy Bull Stakes at Gulfstream Park. Greatest Honor won it, looked good. You know, one thing about Greatest Honor, Tappet, his dam's a sister to, you know, Rags to Riches and Jazzle, so lots of pedigree there. But his maiden win in late December at Gulfstream, he won by about a length. It was sort of like the grinding, you know, like just, you know, okay, like performance. Didn't look anything special. I thought he took a huge step forward. Now, I'm not exactly sure the quality of the horses in the Holy Bull, but I thought Greatest Honor looked great doing it visually, and it's obvious, looks like the type that will continue to move forward for Shug McGahee. I will say this about Shug. It was sort of a little bit similar to Orb, who opened his year at Gulfstream with an allowance win. It really came back a slow race on time-wise and on speed ratings. Wise, but he really moved forward off of that effort. I think Greatest Honor showing that same kind of a trajectory and how he's moving forward for a Hall of Fame trainer. And then the other prep was the Robert Lewis at Santa Anita. I, you know, that race didn't come back fast on the speed ratings, but I'm not putting too much stock in those numbers, Steve. That was a drying out, funky track. They had eight races. Only one race was won wire to wire. That was Medina Spirit. His opening half mile was 46 and change. The other three two-turn races, they were going in like 48, 49, 50. So he really ran fast on that track. He got hooked in upper stretch by two, I think, quality rivals in Hot Rod Charlie and Roman Centurion, and he dug in gamely to win. A very good race to build upon, I would think. He's got a lot of pedigrees, got tactical speed. He seems to have a lot going for him. The runner-up, Roman Centurion, Empire Maker Colt, who just making his first start against winners off of a good-looking maiden win. I thought he ran really well, too. Has a lot of potential as well. And, you know, it was a big gap from third to fourth as well. So I just thought that was a really solid race. I came away impressed by both winners.
Yeah, one of the things I thought that was interesting that Baffert said on Tuesday was that he doesn't think by any stretch Medina Spirit has to, you know, be on a lead. And so that alone is a pretty, you know, a pretty interesting recommendation. The thing that's very notable is this was very fast early and very slow late. I mean, They collectively, the three of them, you know, came home very slow. I mean, they came home in, I think, 50, I want to say in 59 and change for, you know, what four and a half furlongs. And so it's they have to come
all
up with
three, the
finish.
The top three finishers, they all dropped off of their last race. I mean, you look at Medina Spirit, Hot Rod Charlie, and Roman Centurion, they all got better figures in their previous race. So that's definitely a valid point, but I did like the class that Medina Spirit has showed so far, and he's the type that can keep improving, I think.
Well, we're going to talk about the preps, and of course, we're also going to get, I did see you dropped your Super Bowl preview a couple of days ago, too, so I want to get that involved. We'll save that for after the race side of things, and knowing that Tampa is going to be a lot of the focus, I let's slip in the Withers first before we go to Tampa.
Yeah, and the Withers, you know, got a field in there where I like Kepo Kane coming right back, Steve. I do think it's I do think that he's going to people are a little bit still a little bit suspicious of him off of that upset in the Drome. I really liked you know, he was drifting out, but he was winning, running away. And while he could catch some pressure from the outside in there, I still expect him to, you know, be on the engine from his post number three. Obviously, his main rivals in there, risk-taking for Chad Brown, and then Pletcher has a pair, Donegal Bay and Overtook. You know, I'd be looking at them. Oh, I'll even mention Royal Number for Trombetta. I did take a look at that race of his at Laurel. Really sharp performance. But I like Capo Kane right back on the front end for Harold Weiner. Harold Weiner was the initial trainer for, I think, Jesus's team before he was turned over to Connection. So a little interesting. That horse based at Parks. And, you know, we'll see if he can stretch out. He is going from a one-turn mile to a mile and an eighth. But, you know, he's by Street Sense hard spun, and he broke his maiden going two turns at a mile and 70 yards. So I think the extra ground won't stop him.
Let's turn our attention south and the card at Tampa. And whether you want to talk the prep first, the Sam Davis. All right.
Let's go right into the Sam F. Davis. It's a race where you have, you know, you've got a lot of, like, I think, betting options in here. It's a 12-horse field. I think six horses in here, you know, could be made of. Four. I'll start right away with number three, Known Agenda, Todd Pletcher horse, a horse that in his first race ran second to Highly Motivated, who came back and won a stake for Chad Brown. And then in his next race, he beat Greatest Honor. Really kept good company in those first two starts. In the Remsen, you know, he ran sort of evenly that day, didn't really fire, just basically held his place while the top two ran 1-2 around the oval. That was on a sloppy track. I'm willing to give him an excuse for that. Looks like he's training well. Pletcher has won the Davis six times, the Tampa Bay Derby five times. I read Marty McGee's advance on the race, and you know, he threw those stats out there for everybody. And he's a horse I think will bounce back, will run better than he did in the Remsen. Definitely a horse you have to respect in here. Smiley Sabaka is the morning line favorite for Dale Romans. He's a Brody's Cause colt that, after running second in a sprint, broke his maiden nicely at Keeneland by two lengths. And his effort in the Kentucky Jockey Club, Steve, was a really solid performance, because that was a track that day at Churchill that favored stalkers and off-the-pace types. And Smiley Sabaka was on the lead. And, you know, he did get run down in the end by Keep Me in Mind, who was coming off a second in the Breeders' Cup, or a third in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. But that was a really good race, your first race against winners, first stakes experience. So it looks like he's been training pretty well for Romans at Gulfstream. Bill Mott has two horses in the field. Nova Rags won the 7-furlong Pasco. You know, he's a horse that is going to stretch out the two turns, but being by Union Rags and out of a Smart Strike mare, you would think he could do it. And then his other runner, Candy Rocket, he ran a fast race, breaking his maiden by nine lengths at Gulfstream. He'll be trying to take company, but he's listed 10-1 on the morning line, Steve. I think he'll get bet down a little bit. And I'll also mention Hidden Stash, who is certainly eligible to run well for Vicky Oliver. Looks like a horse that, you know, really moved forward when stretching out the two turns. Does draw a tough post in there, but I thought he beat a really nice colt last time in that Scarred. He's an intermission colt for Steve Asmussen. And then the final horse I'll mention that will take some action is Boca Boy, Florida bred, coming off a win in the In Reality division of the Florida Stallion Series in late September. The horse I like in the group, I think Known Agenda is the horse to beat, Steve. He's my top pick in there, but I'll definitely have Handyman Rocket and Hidden Stash, because I just think they're going to have some value in any like multi race plays I make.
Yeah, and I saw where Andy made the point about that 6-1 Unknown Agenda. You could probably cut that in half by the time
Absolutely.
Spring the latch.
Favoritism. There is a chance of rain in Oldsmar at Tampa Bay Downs. But it looks like it might come in. If it does even come in, it won't be until late in the day. So there's still a chance, good chance we'll have a fast track down there. And, you know, and let's hope, you know, and Andy's right. I mean, Known Agenda is going to take a lot of money. You know, I think people are going to recognize that Remsen, he just didn't fire, and are going to give him a lot of respect for that beating Greatest Honor two races back.
The Sam Davis, obviously the race that will be focused upon, but the Endeavor, the Suncoast, the Tampa Bay, and actually there's a very nice allowance early mid card as the sixth. There's a 6.5 furlong 3-year-old filly maiden special weight where, you know, there might be a hidden talent lurking.
No doubt. But Grand Motion has Mary France. Definitely a filly. Looks like she's going to be a state caliber performer, you know. And Secret Time is in there for Delacour, who shipped over and ran fifth in the Hilltop, and then a good second last time at Gulfstream Park West. Both those horses, I thought, were – that is a really good allowance for race number six on the card, Steve.
Well, dive in. Let's start back with the Tampa Bay. The Grade 3 goes as the eighth race, and it does start the pick five. And the one hiccup here, which I just don't ever understand is ending a sequence, a pick five, with an 8,000 non-3 when you very easily could have used that allowance race as one of the, you know, as part of the pick five. It's just a, you know, not that you know, the 8,000 non-3, you know, might not be formful, but I don't know. I just prefer if you've got a, you know, a classier race. I mean, there were several options here that they could have built this sequence. But anyway, it starts with the Grade 3.
The Tampa Bay Stakes, yeah. Tampa. At a mile and 16th on turf, and it looks like there's plenty of speed entered in this field, Steve, with Get Smoke and Improving Strategies being front runners. You know, the morning line favorite, Fancy Liquor, he draws outside, but he's eligible to get a good trip right off the speed, be in position, turning for home. Sorry about the dog in the background. The horse I like in here is Gray's Creek. He's making his first start, first stakes appearance for Chad Brown. He'll take a lot of money, obviously, with a three-race win streak in tow, but really liked all of those performances. I really, you know, looked good breaking his maiden this summer, and then that allowance win at Keeneland, and then coming back at Gulfstream and winning like he did. I thought both those races were solid efforts. Won't be surprised to see him win. The other horse I'll use on any kind of multi-race bets that is a better price is Talk or Listen, number 4 for Arnaud Delacour. Delacour's winning 31% of his starts at this meet. And I really like this Talk or Listen, Steve, his race last time. He sat down on the inside, you know, waited for an opening to, you know, come about. And then really, I thought, finished pretty well. He's going to get the right setup, eligible to keep moving forward off that race. 15-1 on the morning line. He's a long shot to take a look at in the Tampa Bay.
Nice. I would note Fancy Liquor for Maker too in here. I actually was surprised at how aggressive the morning line came out with him at 3-1. I kind of thought maybe there was a chance he'd get a little, you know, a little better number there, but I think you got to use Fancy Liquor no matter what you're doing in this Tampa Bay to get things started. The Suncoast for the 3-year-old fillies, and this has been a funny race over the years that some highly regarded fillies have come in to start their 3-year-old campaign and laid eggs, but then gone on to good things. Always a interesting starting point for the 3-year-old fillies. In the
Suncoast. Yeah, definitely a mile 70 yards. You know, this I took a hard look at, you know, the number 5 honorific. She broke her maiden at Churchill Downs in mid-November. I think I was there that day. I thought she looked pretty good doing so. But really, I thought good finish last time in that cash run stakes, that January 1st cash run stakes at Gulfstream, has the top two finishers, Gold Coast and Honorife, back in this spot. They're both like major win contenders in here. Number two, Feeling Mischief. For Michael Campbell, really a good win, two starts back in the Sandpiper. Couldn't catch the top two in the Gasparilla, but eligible, I thought, to maybe get a good trip from Inside Post tomorrow. I'll mention a couple horses in here, though, that I thought were intriguing. First off, number four, Curlin's Catch for Mark Cassie. That's a filly that just didn't like the Tapeta at Woodbine. When she ran last time at Gulfstream, I thought that was a really sharp win. I think she's going to be forwardly placed off that effort. And that Tabor Hall that she beat came back to win real sharply at Gulfstream in her next start. That's the horse I'll be using, number four, Curlin's Catch. And another price play in there a little bit, Steve, is number eight, Be Sneaky for Delacour. I really thought I liked her debut, this Into Mischief Philly's debut, where she gutted out like a nose maiden win. And then when she came back last time in that Smart Halo at Laurel, that was just a completely different kind of race. The horse that beat her that day, Street Luke, is just a super sprinter up in Maryland. She's won like four straight stakes. And that was really a good effort, battling on a hot pace that day after having things her own way in the debut and finishing third. I think she'll improve off that race. She's 12-1, gets Hector Diaz, who's, you know, he's riding pretty well at Tampa this meet. And she's a horse to consider in there at odds.
All right. Keep going.
All right, and then in the race, in the Endeavor, which is your next race, the mile 16th turf race, you got, you know, this Chad Brown's filly, Counterparty Risk, is going to take a lot of money in there. Broker Maiden at Aqueduct in her second start, Australian filly, and then Ship West ran second to her stable mate in the Lady Shamrock on the opening day at Santa Anita. I won't be surprised if she wins, but I like the filly to her outside for Bill Mott, number six, New York Girl. New York Girl. An Irish Group 3 winner. I just really liked her race that she ran last time on New Year's Eve at Gulfstream. I expect her to keep moving forward off that effort. And if this Counterparty Risk gets bet down, you know, I might get a good price. I might get a fair value for a filly that looks like she has huge upside, New York Girl.
The mile and a 16th, and I mentioned yesterday that I had taken a big shot at a reverse tri key with Iron of Reality, who ran a super race at 51-1 in the Previant for Ron Potts, and Villa Gomez gets aboard.
You love that bet, don't you?
That's you know, the greatest. I blew this one though.
Yeah. I did that within a short field last week with that long shot, that old, not that mod horse that I gave you that ran second at like 36-1 in the Swale to that horse that looked dynamite winning the race, drained the clock. And the exotics were huge. I mean, it was a short field. Yep. You had an even money favorite. I mean, like the $2 exacta paid $80. So that's the way to play those long shots is underneath, even, you know, with favorites.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the stakes action. I'll mention a horse I did like on the undercard real quick, if it's okay.
Sure.
And, race number five. It's a maiden race. I like this number eight, Son of Thunder. I'm going to take a shot on this first-time starter for Delacour. He's a full brother to Leia Ban. Appears to be training pretty solidly. And I know it's a small sample size, but when Delacour debuts horses at a mile or longer, he wins at a 27% clip. And most trainers are the exact opposite. I just found that interesting how well he's been doing of late with the horses that he runs long first out. And this Son of Thunder, I thought, was a little intriguing in race number five, Steve.
Interesting. The eight, Son of Thunder, casting on for Arnaud Delacour. I like it, going a mile and 40 in the debut and giving away experience to a number of them in here, virtually everybody but the Pletcher on the rail, core curriculum. Interesting.
And that horse is an empire maker. He's a half brother to Temple City, who's a Grade Three winner. He'll take some money. You got to think. Core curriculum.
Fifth race and the whole card to Tampa. We'll come back to Tampa in a little bit. Although Jay Privman, who's going to join us next, Jay will talk about the Sam Davis. But then when we get Nick Tamaro in hour three, we'll take another look at the cross country pick five as well. James, that gives us about 4 minutes, 5 minutes for some Super Bowl thoughts from you. And I'm going to tweet out your piece from the other day and flesh out your approach to Sunday.
Yeah, my approach is I'm looking for Tampa's defense to play well. I think we're going to get a real good feel. Kansas City's always a threat to blow out their opposition. We saw it in the AFC Championship game after their first possession. They never punted again, and they were scoring touchdowns on every drive. Tampa Bay has to come out and be aggressive defensively and slow them down. And they're going to have an opportunity to do that because that loss of Eric Fisher, the starting right tackle, the linchpin of their offensive line, I do think that's going to affect the passing game. I think it's going to put them in a situation where they're either going to have to help out with the blocking, or it's just not going to have as much time for routes to develop down the field as they have in previous games. So I'm looking for a strong defensive showing from Tampa Bay. They're obviously going to have to score a lot of points, but they have scored at least 30 points in like 8 games in a row. I think they're going to come out and play well on both sides of the ball. It's going to be a close game in the fourth quarter, but I'm going with the Buccaneers to pull it out, and I'm going to grab the 3 points. And if they do lose, I hope it's by less than a field goal.
the over-under, 56.5, although I should check that again. That was a couple of days ago. I don't know if that's moved anymore. Any prop ideas? I mean, it sounds like...
I do. I think the best young defensive player in the NFL is Devin White. He's a second-year linebacker for the Bucs. He has 26 tackles in the last two games. The over-under on his tackles is 9.5, and I'm playing the over. I'm looking for him to be the best defensive player on the field and really play well. I also think that the Chiefs are going to try to blitz Kansas City, and Tom Brady knows how to handle the blitz better than anybody. And one avenue he does it is he throws the screen pass. The over-under on receptions for Leonard Fournette is 3.5. I'm playing the over, Steve.
Very good. Any gimmicks that appeal to you?
No. I'll still take a closer look at those props over the next 2 days. Kind of gimmicks and stuff over the next 2 days. But those are the ones that really stand out to me.
Very good. And James has got a nice write-up at the Twin Spires blog, and I'll send the link out to it. And we'll also, speaking of the blog, and of course it is weekend preview brought to you by Twin Spires, we'll leaderboard contest, and I'll go over that stuff with Ed in hour two. James, good luck at Tampa, New York, everywhere else. Do you have a Friday, last-second Friday push?
I got a last-second Friday play. Turfway Park, race number 7 tonight. Number 10, a Miss Imperfection. She's 12-1 on the morning line for Kellen Gorder. Comes off an improved effort, rounding back into form. Going to be a good trip. Number 10, Miss Imperfection, in race 7 at Turfway Park.
All right, I'm just reaching to print out the quick sheet, and so I've got it. This is just unbelievable. I hadn't looked at tonight's card at Tampa. Every single card is just packed. 10 by 12 by 11 by 11 by 12 by 11 by 10 by 12 every single night at Turfway. It's crazy. Amazing.
No doubt about it.
Good fun.
All right, Steve, enjoy the weekend. Always enjoy talking to you. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. James Scully, everybody. James underscore Scully, 111. Take a break real quick. Quick turnaround. Jay Privman, DRF Privman, joins us next. We'll talk about Santa Anita's action, some nice stakes card tomorrow, and we'll get his recap on the Derby Watch front from last weekend, the Lewis and the Holy Bull. Jay joins us after this at the races, hour two.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports.